Yeah, okay. So, 3, 2, 1.
From the heart of the earth to the world, RTI.
Well, hello, everybody. It's time for Postcard from Poprad again, that sideways look at the news. With Eric, give us a break, Wiltshire. That very erudite, very charming, very witty, very handsome, very tall, Lee G. Banks, and Mark Goosey Gander in Paris.
Well, I've never heard that one before. my whole school life was blighted by being Goosey Gander. But we know where he wandered, didn't we? And yes, I'm in Paris, and it's actually a very nice day.
Have you ever been in Paris Hilton? Sorry, the Hilton of Paris?
No, neither.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, anyway, this week we have to say that the terrible trio of Eric, Lee and Mark are not together. It's actually that dubious duo of Mark and me. Eric's got man flu. Yeah, and I tell you what, as far as I'm concerned, it's a perfect match for his man boobs.
His what?
He's got man flu. Eric's got man flu.
I thought you just said man boobs.
I never mentioned man boobs. Why would I mention man boobs?
No reason at all.
You're just being childish at the beginning of the programme.
Yes.
You're trying to make it go down the same track as we always go. No, we're going to be intelligent and charming and do things properly. Yeah. Anyway, anyway, what I was going to say, I've completely forgotten now. Petra, the wonderful Petra, is keeping up the ending Poprad.
Yes.
So, yeah. Eric's got mum flu, you've got a broken shoulder, and I've got...
Which is going to be repaired next week.
Is it? You're really going to get it out?
I am, yes. I'm going into hospital on Tuesday. They're going to break the bloody thing again. And then they're going to put a plate and some screws, so...
Isn't breaking it what caused the problem in the first place?
Well, yeah, but the trouble is that it's starting to heal up in a very, very bad way, which causes a lot of aggravation. They're going to repair it. They do it properly. And I know. So who was that guy who fell off his bike in the Tour de France? He was in hospital and being operated within 24 hours, as my one should have been sort of done. But there we are. I'll be all right for next week's show.
You'll be all right for next week's show. What, it'll all be healed and sorted out? Or won't you have it strapped up? Are you having a metal plating?
I'm having a metal plate.
Are you indeed? What sort of metal plate are you going to have?
Well, I don't know. I hope it's not magnetic, you know, because I won't...
Well, it's the only way you get girls to stick to you, yeah?
That's right, yes.
Well, no, don't they put a titanium plate in?
I don't know. I really don't know. I mean,
you want to know what somebody's actually going to put in your body?
I do. I'll let you know when it's done.
All right. Anyway, listen... For once, we've actually got a lot of messages. So why don't we move on and we'll do the messages?
Yes.
The first one is from Julian Fisher, one of our regular listeners. It says, actually, this one was addressed to Eric. It says, you were bang on the mark, recognising what truly started the end of the news of the world, Ford pulling their pounds out. Well, actually... Julian, I'm sure you would expect me to disagree with you, but actually I don't disagree with you, but the rot set in a little bit before that, and you have to accept that Ford were actually reacting to the situation that was surrounding the news of the world at the time. But Mark and I are going to have a chat about the news of the world later, because I think it's not exactly the way it was when Mark first joined us, where I don't think either of us could see eye to eye on anything. Now we do tend to see eye to eye on a lot of things.
But
yes, we do.
No, we don't.
Yes, we do. Don't you try and turn this show into a pantomime.
Right, okay.
But, I think on this News of the World thing, there are still some interesting views to be made, particularly as Rebecca Brooks has just resigned.
Yes.
And I'm not surprised at that, are you, Mark, really?
Not at all. I mean, I think that, you know, she stood up to an enormous amount of pressure, but I think that she had to go. And, I mean, certainly putting her in charge of the internal investigation, I think that was very rightly criticised. Getting very, very interesting, isn't it? I mean, we've now got the American government who's starting to take a very close look at what might have happened after 7/11. I mean, really, one wonders, when's this all going to end? It's really getting incredible.
Well, the thing is, I tell you what, well, we were going to do this later, but you've just sparked me off on that. The thing is, Mark, the reason there's so much starting to be revealed is because it's actually nothing new. It's something that's gone on for the last 150 years in one way, shape or form or the other. It's basically investigative journalism. And investigative journalism takes you into places where normally people wouldn't go. And because you're going into places where you normally wouldn't go, you tend not to talk about it. Now it's starting to be revealed. And the question is, A, do we want to sacrifice the press because of these sort of peccadilloes? But B, the most important question is, surely what's actually being exposed is corruption right at the upper echelons of our society, whether it's American, whether it's England, whether it's in Europe, wherever.
Yes.
We have corruption at the top, and that is the job of the newspapers to reveal, and that's exactly what the News of the World has done by falling on its own sword.
Well, that's exactly right. The trouble is that, you know, you get to a very, very difficult position when you find that the press themselves are involved in the corruption. Then it becomes very difficult. I think that, you know, people are meant to trust the press, and I think it's just so important.
This is what I mean. You're also meant to be able to trust your politicians.
Well, absolutely, but for some reason or other, you know, I think it goes with the territory that people don't trust the politicians. But the press, it seems to me that the virtue for them is really to be attacking the politicians. And in fact, when we find that they're in bed together, then I think it's very, very difficult to find out what's really going on.
And we're also, aren't we, Mark, we're supposed to be able to trust the police.
Isn't that extraordinary? I mean, really, not only do we find that probably that the Metropolitan Police have been taking money, but in fact, at some points, it seems to, in the last few years, to have been officially acknowledged that they've been taking money, and why on earth was nothing done about it?
Because it's all gone on. It's nothing new.
It's just shocking. I mean, it really is shocking. And I must say, I'm just wondering how many people are altogether involved. And personally, I'm just wondering, you know, what is going to be the total number of years served by all of these people who finally get arrested? And I'm sure that there will be trials and so forth. I mean, it's going to be quite amazing. And at some point when we discover a little bit more, I'm just wondering maybe we might try an RTI sweepstake to find out who's going to guess the right number of total years.
I don't think many people are going to, heads are going to roll. I think there'll be sort of token heads will roll over this. And ultimately, at the end of the day, I'll tell you straight, I don't think the way the press acts is going to change at all. I think they will continue exactly the way they are. These are the covert operations of the press, which are done with the full knowledge and the backing of the police and of politicians. So how's anything going to change?
Well, that's a very, very gloomy picture, I have to say. I mean, all I can say is that, you know, I'm just going to keep on looking at it. I mean, there is so much that we don't know about what's going on. I mean, a lot of this is just speculation. But, of course, you know, it is massive. But I find it very difficult to imagine that really nothing is going to change and it's going to be business as usual.
Well, you know what? You've just hit the nail on the head, because it is business as usual for the press, for the police, and for politicians. And the game that they all play, least of all, I've got to say, the press, are manipulating the truth. What about Gordon Brown? What about The Guardian and Gordon Brown? Saying that he was in tears. This today, The Guardian's apologised, saying it was a load of rubbish.
That's right, yes. I mean, that's quite extraordinary, isn't it? But, I mean, hopefully that was just a, you know, maybe a silly and maybe a careless and maybe an unwarranted mistake. But hopefully that, you know, The Guardian hasn't sort of...
He went on telly saying it, didn't he?
Yeah.
He went on telly, he sat there on TV and was interviewed. He said how he felt. He talked about his own tears. He said everything. But, in fact, almost certainly, The Sun hadn't done what he said they'd done. That's the sort of corruption that, I'm not saying that Gordon is corrupt, of course, but that is the sort of misinformation, twisted sort of presentations, misunderstandings, if you want to call it that, anything you want to call it. But those are the problems that this committee, these tribunals are going to have to deal with in these situations.
Yeah, what a huge mess to unravel. I mean, it really is going to be a huge mess.
Yeah, I agree with you.
And I think we've got no idea how far this stretches. And is it only News International? Is it the rest of them? I mean, are they all really sort of doing this?
I'll hold my hands up, Mark, now, and I will tell you categorically that every newspaper in the world, virtually, in some way, shape or form, has done what would be classed as dirty tricks. I don't know if you saw Neil Wallace, the ex, I think he was one of the deputy editors or assistant editors of News of the
yeah,
World.
Yeah, he's been arrested.
He's been arrested.
Yes.
And you know what? You know what? Think this through seriously, quite seriously. There he is. I know Neil Wallace. I work with Neil Wallace, believe it or not. We work together on the Daily Star.
Oh, and I thought you did time with him.
No, we were never on the
Sunday. Right, yeah. Okay.
But I think we did, I think we're on the Sunday People as well together.
Yeah.
Anyway, dead simply, good journalist, really on the ball, hard hitting, risen through the ranks.
Yeah.
And he was called in because of everything that was going on, but has also been taken to task by the press, by everybody else, for writing speeches for a leading policeman. But he went to tender on that. He went to tender on it. It just happened to be that the 24,000 that he said he would do the job for was the cheapest, so he got the job. I can't see that being something that you need arresting for. You applied for a job and got it, and so you get arrested.
Yeah, so it's not what he's been arrested for, is it?
It's all part and parcel of it. It's all part and parcel of it. That's what I'm saying. At the moment, it's like an open wound and everybody's walking up and kicking it and trying to make political capital out of it. I think it's just bizarre. But then that's what the press is there for. The press is strong enough to stand up for itself and fight its own battles.
Well, yeah, but mind you, I mean, you know, some of the press are really enjoying having a kick at the News of the World and News International. And
of course,
you know, the other real disadvantage that the Murdochs are suffering from is that they're hugely successful, they're hugely rich, and nobody likes that. So this is a wonderful opportunity to get stuck in. I mean, rather in the same way that that people eventually started to get stuck into Robert Maxwell. You know, when he was, well, I mean, he had to be down and out before they could tackle.
I've got to put my hand out. It was I as you know, live on a pittance because I'm a glamorous writer living in a garret who makes no money, and the only thing I've got is my Robert Maxwell pension.
You should have tried a bit of corruption then.
I know. Yeah. Well, I've got a bit. Anyway, yeah, we're still on messages, you know.
Are we really?
Yeah, we're still doing messy. Let's do the next one, right?
Yeah.
Next one. Hope you're keeping well at RTI. Now, this one I don't understand. It's only because I don't understand the name. So I'm just going to do it as it is because I don't think it names the person the message is about. Anyway, it says, I have a request from a Dutch friend of mine who's looking for work anywhere in Europe.
Yeah.
Do you know anybody who might be able to help him? It looks like that has come from Buddy Loonen. Right, who I think is Dutch. Anyway, he says that his mate or himself is looking for work as a graphic designer, art director, or creative concept thinker in a variety of media. Is there anybody out there who can help him?
Well, I must say, he probably has to join the queue with all the people who are looking for that kind of work. But, I mean, good for him for writing a message to this, and let's hope he has some success.
That's a funny thing, isn't it? I agree with you, you know, because everybody and his dog now takes media courses.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, it does worry me. I mean, I'm sure it's great. I'm sure it's great fun. But I have to say, you know, in terms of whether it's going to be a guaranteed meal ticket.
Well, what do you do with a media course? That doesn't qualify you to particularly do anything in the media because, as we've just been talking about, nobody really understands how the media works. So how does that help you?
Well, I don't know. Mind you, I mean, he's a graphics designer and so forth. I mean, so, you know, those are quite sort of practical skills. But I suppose everybody's trying to get into web design and so forth. But, I mean, there are huge numbers of people trying to get into this stuff. You know, I wonder what the percentage is of these people who actually end up working in that industry and how many of them go on instead to become teachers or to become, you know, civil servants of some sort or, you know, insurance salesmen. I don't know.
That's right. Well, what are you actually qualified as, Mark? What you know, when you left university or college, what was your intention
to be? Yeah, well, my first degree was a law and social science degree, and I then started studying for the bar to be a barrister in England. And then I suddenly got involved teaching, and I must say that it was the most exciting thing I'd ever done. And
what, for teaching?
Yes, I ended up teaching universities. It was just amazing. It was
so true that teachers are just people who can't do the thing.
Well, they do say that, and I personally, I think that I suppose my ex-teaching colleagues are really going to be after me for this, but I think that to a certain extent, I think teachers have quite an easy life, and it's quite nice not to be in the real world and not to have those pressures. There are other pressures, including, for instance, you know, a lack of money, because it's not fabulously paid, but it's tremendously stimulating, and I enjoyed it enormously.
What did you teach, law?
Well, I taught law, and I taught a variety of areas of law, and eventually I ended up doing a master's in intellectual property and art law, and taught, taught copyright law and trademark law and art law for a while. The art law was absolutely fabulous. Very interesting indeed, talking about, you know, stolen art and the authentication of art and all the kinds of questions that get raised in relation to that. And then eventually I ended up adopting two children with my partner, and it seemed a better idea for me to go and live in France, because she's a barrister as well and earning a shed load more than I was. And I came over to France and ended up starting up the Consumer Action Group, which is mainly what I do now.
So actually, we're both house husbands.
Yes, in France they call it a papa poule, the chicken father.
A chicken father?
Yes, which I... A chicken
That's because you scared your kids.
Chicken father, yeah. And I think it's, you know, meant to be a bit sort of insulting. You know, it doesn't really go along with the idea of the Mediterranean macho male, because they are a bit Mediterranean and macho, as we know, for instance, with Dominic Strauss-Kahn and the way that apparently he's been treating his female colleagues and so forth.
So what's it called in France, a house husband?
A papa poule.
A papa poule.
Yeah, chicken pool is chicken, and papa is papa. So
I think in Britain, a house husband, the actual phrase for a house
or a hen, I should say a hen. Yeah, the idea that you're squatting on the nest there.
Oh dear, you're right. Well, yeah, in Britain, yeah, I think the phrase for house husband is really actually out of work.
No, I don't think so at all. I'm sure that there are lots of men there with very professional wives
middle class and Ikey.
No, well, I think that's right. I mean, it probably is middle class, but I think that there are a huge number
it
of
is,
women
because
now
you just
who
said
go
middle class.
That's the way I speak.
Middle class.
Middle class.
Say middle class. That's how you should say it if you're proper.
Mancusian accent.
Yeah.
No. But anyway, no, I think there are lots of professional men who work from home, and in a way, maybe it is the sort of, you know, the sort of inequality that requires the women to go out to work, and maybe that, you know, men, professional men, do have extra flexibility to stay at home and to work from home, and so they end up also taking on some more family responsibilities. No, I don't think it's a bad thing, actually.
No, but it is something that's looked down upon slightly, isn't it? If you go in the pub, you're standing there with all your village people builder mates, all in the big boots and shorts and drinking 17 pints a night, and they say, what do you do then? And you don't say you're a bricklayer, you're not a hog carrier, you say, I'm a house husband. Yeah, all of a sudden the beer stops coming in your way, and all of a sudden all the village people start backing off.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's probably true, but I have to say that I think that the people that I know here in Paris... are a bit puzzled the fact that I'm sort of the main carer for my kids. But I can tell you, I'm having a fantastic time because I just loved looking after the kids because I think they're brilliant and I get on with them hugely. And also, I enjoy doing the Consumer Action Group, which is a stunning thing that none of the people and none of the lawyers, because we know a lot of lawyers here, none of them have ever imagined getting involved in that kind of thing. So I think I'm pretty lucky.
I think I understand what you're saying. I understand what you're saying. Yeah, I'm lucky me, aren't we? Because I do what I want to do, which is be a failed writer.
Yes.
And that's what
and
I
you
do.
You do that very well.
right, we're still on the messages.
Yes.
So, there's a mate of mine. Well, when I say he's a mate, it's a bloke I met, and he's quite a lad. Nico Alm from Austria.
Yeah. Who's actually do you really know this guy?
Well, I know him sort of vaguely. Yeah, he's like a Facebook friend and stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah, and he's actually won the right to wear what he classes as religious headgear, which is actually a pastor strainer.
Yes, a colander.
A colander, yeah. And it's because he believes he is part of the religious group, the Pastafarians.
Yeah. I think he was saying it to mock the system, actually. He what is it? I mean, I think he applied for a driving license, didn't he, with his colander on his head in the photograph. And initially they said,
"Nein, you're not allowed to have this in Austria. This is not acceptable." But I suppose, actually, that, of course, that in Austria, as in Germany, they're extremely worried about disadvantaging any kind of creed or class or belief because of their very unfortunate history. And after about 3 years, he managed to force them to accept it. And
he now,
and I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, good on you.
We've agreed. Yes, good on you.
Well, that's what we said, actually, if ladies and gentlemen remember, when Mark first joined the show, we couldn't even agree on whether it was morning or evening. It was just the way we are. Right, we've got to move on, because we're still on the messages, and we've hardly got any time left. But I've got to mention, I think this is tragic, and actually, it's got quite a serious point to it, because there is something else I want to mention as well. We do obits, people who've died during the week, and it's tragic and everything. Well, we've actually called it Real Gone Kids, which I think is really cool. But, and one of the real gonest kids of the week is Sherwood Schwartz, the writer of Gilligan's Island.
Yeah, what an amazing name as well.
Exactly. Do you remember Gilligan's Island?
Well, no, I'm trying to think about this. But I mean, what intrigues me is that this is apparently it was a program or a series about seven travelers marooned on a Pacific island. I mean, this made in the 1960s. I mean, we're looking at some 1960s version of Lost and this kind of thing, aren't we? I mean, this guy's very much ahead of his time.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely he was, yeah. And he did that other thing as well, didn't he? What was it called? The Brady Bunch, which I must admit I've never seen. Anyway, he's 94, he's died. This is something I just want to say. Do you remember, Mr. Mark, because you're on the ball on modern culture and things. Do you remember that song?
Sorry, sniff what? I'm just
bigging up your part, dear. Right, do you remember Matt Cardle, that doyen of pop brought around by that bloke, I can't remember his name, who wears his trousers up round his chest on X Factor?
No. I've never seen X Factor.
Oh, man, you're not missing anything. Anyway, but what I don't understand, right, this Gilligan's Island, and within that song, which actually was made famous by a bloke called Biffo Gyro, it was called Many of a Horror at the time, and he talks about Gilligan's Eyes. I've got Gilligan's Eyes. What's that all about? Yeah, I've got the lyrics here. I've just found it. Sitting in a wishing hole, hoping it stays dry. Feet cast in solid stone. It doesn't even rhyme. I got Gilligan's eyes. What's that about?
Wait, hang on, is this a song or something?
Yeah, that's what I've just said. It's by Matt Cardle.
Was it successful?
It was brilliant. It's absolutely, I think it's the world's. It's also got the verse here, right? Just listen to this and see what you think. Quite seriously, I'll ask you a serious question on this. The chorus is, when we collide, we come together. If we don't, we'll always be apart. Well, yeah. I'll take a bruise. I know you're worth it. When you hit me hard. What's that about, Mark? What is Simon Cowell doing, making a song become a massive hit that advocates violence within a relationship?
Well, I mean, it's a bit like hit me with your rhythm stick, isn't it? You know,
that was sexual. This is... That's what well, it's about. No, this is... I'll take a bruise. I know you're worth it. When you hit me hard. I think Simon Cowell should hang his head in shame over that, and should Matt Cardle.
I'd never heard of it, but I have to say I don't like the sound of the lyrics. I suppose, but is it a rap song or is it a tune?
No, it was a proper pop song.
Really?
Yeah. Hang on. Hang about.
By a man or by a woman?
By Matt Cardle. I've been telling you for the last.
Oh right, yeah.
It's me who's supposed to not listen, not you.
Role reversal. I agree. I don't like the sound of it of I'll take a bruise and so forth. I don't think it's necessarily very appropriate. But on the other hand, there are a lot worse things. I remember in the 1960s, there was a band called John's Children, which Mark Boland was in, actually, right at the beginning. And they did it, in fact, they lived next door to me in North Finchley in London. And they did a song called I Don't Go to Bed with Girls Like You. you know, which of course, I mean, one wouldn't, would one? But then it was like banned. It was banned by the BBC. So I think we've moved on a bit now.
Listen, right, we better get on to the news now because I think we've got about 3 minutes left to go on the first half.
Yes.
Right? I take this as a really serious story, and I think, you know, it's not something remotely we should joke about. I think it's probably the most horrific thing that I've ever heard. I've actually seen Hollywood horror films made about stories like this, and this has actually started to happen because of the internet. I can't believe it. A 17-year-old student. Yeah. He's in Japan, isn't he? He actually sold his kidney.
I think that's China, actually. And,
what did I say?
I think you said Japan.
He sold his kidneys for 20,000 yen.
Yeah.
So that he could buy an iPad 2.
Yeah.
Well, all right, the lad's an idiot. You can't put him any other way. The lad is an idiot. At 17 years old, he should have a better idea of what life's about than an iPad without and lose your kidneys for it. But the problem is, he sold it to a broker in a chat room on the internet who he then met, and this broker carried out the surgery.
Yeah, and wasn't qualified to do it.
No, and now this lad, I don't know how ill he is. He doesn't actually say whether he's how ill he is, but he is extremely ill because of it. I think that is despicable that the internet has reached the level of that kind of thing where you can actually sell your organs and somebody's going to buy them off you.
Yeah. It is absolutely shocking. I mean, I hope he can swap the iPad for a dialysis machine because it sounds to me he's going to be much more in need of that. But, you know, these kind of scandals, organ trafficking scandals, this has been going on for years and years. And I think that in some countries there have been reports about people getting mugged and their bodies found with their organs being taken out.
That's right.
You know, but this is, you know, very sad that this lad, you know, exactly as you say, wanted an iPad so hugely, just wasn't able to appreciate, you know, how ridiculously low value it was in exchange for a kidney. It's just,
but yeah, absolutely. Crazy. But the thing is, like you say, this tragic. Has been going on for years, and yes. Like you say, bodies. But it's become so much. You would have to, if you wanted to sell your kidney to somebody, you would have to really work hard to find somebody in the underworld who would take that. Now with the internet, you don't. You just sign onto a chat room, and all of a sudden. It's there for you.
It's a disgusting trade. It's a disgusting trade. Yes, I just don't know what to say about it, really. I'm just struck by the tragedy of it all.
So am I. Well, listen, actually...
I sold some blood once.
Did you? How much did you get for it?
I got seven. It was in the 1960s, in the late 1960s. It was an American hospital in Greece, and I was had completely strapped for cash because my money had been stolen, and I sold it for $7 for half a pint.
Blinking it, that's not.
And that $7, that $7 got me all the way back from Greece back to London.
So that's an amazing story. Listen, mate, we're going to have to go because, believe it or not, with only having done one news story. We're now at half time. We'll speak to you again in a couple of seconds, ladies and gentlemen. Eric says that you have to go and make a cup of tea. I don't think you have to go and make a cup of tea. I think you just have to sit here and wait for us to come back.
Yes.
From the heart of Europe to the world, this is RTI.